In a time where social justice organizations are under attack, we bring you Dear Rad Ops, a mini-series advice vlog and podcast about live questions on the minds of movement operations workers. We're in a moment where there is a chance that fear can lead our planning and decision-making. It is a particularly escalated and scary time, and this time is calling for us to do clear organizational risk assessments and find, create, or improve upon operational scaffolding to meet the risk assessment, not the fear assessment. Of course, there is not one answer, but I want us to remember that we sometimes already have what we need. Operations folks have been building, running, and operating organizations for a long time and have some experience and systems in place that we can build on. We received this question with some context. I am in an operations role, and my executive director wants to implement a new security protocol for our organization. It seems to me like a decision based on fear without a grounded assessment of the real risk to our organization, but I don't know how to distinguish between fear and risk in the situation. So the question is, how can I support my ED to reflect on whether this is an individual concern based on fear or an organizational level concern grounded in a risk assessment for our particular conditions? I reached out to our guest, Che Johnson Long, to join me and talk about this question because of their long-standing work around movement safety and security. Che, thank you so much for making the time to talk with me today. Would you introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Che Johnson Long. My pronouns are she and her. I am the Community Safety Director at Vision Change Win. I've been doing community safety work in left movement groups for a little over 15 years. I'm so happy to be here.
So glad to have you, especially since we've been in this work for decades together. And most recently, we were both on different plenaries at the Movement Operations Conference earlier this fall. I spoke in the opening plenary, you spoke in the closing plenary, and we both touched on this about the tension between risk and fear assessments. Thanks for bringing that into that space as well.
Yeah, you know, I think there's so much that I resonate with this question that came up. And if I'm honest, these are the questions that I hear echoed in a lot of movement spaces. So I very much think that this is something that's on many of our minds right now.
Mm-hmm. You have supported many organizations to better understand the difference between fear and risk assessments. What advice do you offer for organizations who are needing to make these clear assessments now?
Fear assessments are really natural, especially when we're in a particularly politically repressive time. I think specifically, fear assessments will often encourage groups to isolate, to move away from coalition partners. Fear assessments are usually led by an individual or sometimes multiple individuals in leadership's trauma response. And a trauma response, in short, is a way that we as individuals have survived a past difficult or traumatic experience. Those responses are really smart. They've gotten us out of a lot of scary moments in the past, and they're often operating as if it is the past. And so part of why we don't want to create fear assessments is because those fear assessments are not good at assessing the current political moment. They look at every moment as if it were that hard thing that you got through in 2017 or that thing that you survived in 1988. And so a risk assessment is what helps us to create responses that are timely, that are recognizing the conditions that we're experiencing right now. Risk assessments, as opposed to fear assessments, they tend to move us closer to coalition partners. So risk assessments look at two questions, really assessing what's likely to happen to my group, given our particular work, our geographic location. And then the second question that they assess is, and what might be the impact of that thing on our goals. And so I find that if a group really wants to get a sense of, am I making a fear assessment or a risk assessment, they can start by asking those two questions. What's the likelihood of this happening? And then what is the impact that it might have? I think from there, you know, we can sort of start to notice our tendency to move away from organizations who we've been in partnership for a long time, or to move towards them and to ask them questions like, I'm worried about this scary thing happening. Has it happened to you? Right? Or I've heard about this thing in the news. Have you heard about it at our local level in our community? These are questions that help us to discern likelihood, but they also move us closer to folks that can sometimes help increase our capacity because we're all tired right now. You know, we all have too many emails in our inbox. We all have many, many emergencies that we have to tend to. And so frankly, we just don't have time to isolate or to try to sort of reinvent the wheel to create new strategies when our coalition partner or our organization that we work with in our city might have already thought through this thing, might have already developed a safety practice. You know, I think one thing I hear a lot right now in movement groups is that they really want to develop a plan for traveling safely, for staff or for leaders or for member leaders. And I encourage you, if you have a question like that, to really assume that at least two other coalition partners in your crew probably also have it. And so where you already have trust, assume that that resource already exists. Assume that that template already exists and that you're really just trying to build off of and fine tune to your group. We are going to be each other's biggest resource right now. We are going to be the ones that support each other through some of the most tedious safety concerns. And so the more that we can talk to each other, the more that we can share resources, but also the more that we can see safety threats coming. Because when we're able to have these conversations, we're also able to notice patterns. We can notice that, you know, if one group in a coalition gets a scary email from a federal agency, that it's possible that other groups that are connected to that group or in coalition might also get that scary email. And so we can get a little bit predictive so that we're able to prevent or even prepare for different threats.
Thank you so much for that. I really feel like what's standing out to me is that when you have a sense of isolating yourself or your organization, that that might be a cue that this might be coming from fear, and that actually the move towards talking to other folks within your organization, within your coalitions, is actually a move towards a grounded risk assessment or a grounded plan for that risk. So I really appreciate that distinction. The topic came up so much in our RADOPS conversations over this last year, and it felt important to name one of our 8 RADOPS principles, which is assess and take calculated risks. We know that making change requires taking risks, and we need to test the edges of what seems impossible and assess the risks and gains of actions based on the conditions of this moment. So what I wanted to ask you is, can you tell us a bit more about how these practices you've offered increase the resilience of organizations?
Safety practices will help to shore up an organization, not just to prevent or address safety threats from attacking our precious movement leaders or our movement work, but they also just make us stronger. So, you know, when we have tighter communication systems with our partners, we're able to launch bold, fierce, radical, strong campaigns that are already backed, right? When we are clear about how long we hold on to documents inside of our organization, it can also help us to engage with members to develop a stronger system for talking to folks regularly. when we create systems that prevent bad actors or potential infiltration from getting into our organizations, that can also increase our base building so that we're able to really intentionally invite people into our organization and move them through leadership. So the more that we can strengthen these safety systems, the easier it is for us to launch incredibly strong and powerful work and to maintain the work that we currently have.
Thank you so much for that. What are some resources people can access to explore this for their own organizations?
I definitely want to lift up that folks should check out our monthly training series, Get Information Training Series, which is on our website. That is an intro level training to getting basic community safety skills around verbal de-escalation, event safety, and organizational safety. We have a organizational safety planning risk assessment tool that I highly recommend that I'm sending around far and wide. I love the Fascism Barometer podcast led by my comrade and colleague, Ijeris Dixon. It's really helpful for understanding this current political moment. And then lastly, Vision Change Win put out a series of safety recommendations in September of 2025. I think those recommendations are still relevant a whole month later. And I think that they can really help if you're not sure where to start, help you to understand where you should prioritizing building practices first.
Thank you so much for joining me, Che, and thank you for all of this work towards making our organizations stronger and more resilient. I'm so glad you were here today.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
As usual, listeners can find links to the resources we mentioned in the show notes wherever you're watching or listening to this. This series is produced by Josh Elstro, with graphic and logo design by Kimmy David, and is published in partnership with Convergence Magazine. Music by Tiger Cat, Shah's amazing 10-year-old, with polish by Josh.